nature, useful protection of the natural resources. And for example, it was very useful for protecting the water sources. Normally, we believe that at the source of the water, there is a very fearsome deity. If you cut down trees in that area, we believe that you will fall sick or you may die. So we never cut even a small tree near the water source. So these kind of beliefs were, I think, very useful for protecting such resources. So finally, I'm sorry to take a very long time. So this I feel is one of my important contributions in my paper, and I want to make a proposal for setting up a Bhutanese folktales online database. I have gone through some online folktales database on the internet. They are usually, most of them are maintained by universities, the department dealing with the folklore study. But they are not very large, and also they are mainly kept for archive. But what I propose here is to make it very dynamic and very useful for everyone. So basically, what we will need in setting up such a database is a database server and a web server. We need to host it on an ISP, and probably an administrator from CVS. Then we will have the users, and the most important of all, I call contributor. What I mean by contributor is that these are the people who will help to collect the folk tales in the form of audio, video, text, and also capture the images. So it actually in all forms of multimedia. I think the cost of setting up this would not be very large. Maybe the main expenses will be in setting up the server and having the website running. So, as I said, I think the most important concern here is how to build the content, how to get the folktales. As I said, the main person here is the contributor. If we go by conventional method, the researchers in CBS would go out into the field and they would talk to the storytellers, they would record, and they would transcribe, and then they would update into the database. I think if we do that way, we will never be able to build a large database. I think we will have only a few hundreds of stories at most. But what I propose is that we could recruit interested individuals who are working in different parts of Bhutan, teachers, corporate employees, private employees, and civil servants, who has interest in folklore, and we can provide them these tools. I think the CBS could provide them with that. Audio recorder, digital camera with video capability. So we can actually capture the action of the storyteller. And computer, I think we probably don't need to provide. They I think will have, or they could use the office computer. And internet connection, probably we could support them monetarily to get an internet connection. And these contributors, because of their own interest, would go and meet the storytellers and record the story in the form of audio, video, image, and text. And they will upload it into the database. And when they have done that, the administrator in the CVS would go through that, and once it is approved by the administrator, it would appear on the website for the general users. Now, the contributors may not upload so many folktales if they don't have another incentive, maybe CBS could give them certain amount of money for each pork tail that they submit, maybe just a nominal amount, and then I think they would be encouraged to submit more fork tails into the database. This is basically how I feel the content could be built. Some of the issues that may need to be considered in going about building the online fork tails database would be the hosting and maintenance of the database server. I think some part could be done by the CBS staff, and some part could be outsourced to the internet service provider. And I think interface design is very important, user-friendly, and it has to be quite appealing. And the archival formats, the different formats in which to archive, and the recruitment of contributors. I think these two are important, and I'm going to talk about it a little bit in detail again, so here I put in red. And other things could be accessibility and terms of use. I think it could be made free for everyone. And also, I think it's important to make the website interactive. Probably we could allow the registered users to post comments, or they can also post a different version of the same story. So it would become very lively discussion. Then search and retrieval, and we could have collaboration with colleges inside the country, and also collaboration with schools. The schools could use these fork tails. They could download it from the website.
First of all, it's been wonderful being in Bhutan. Thank you for hosting us and our entire delegation. In my country, we have a saying that it's never wise to follow an animal act for children when you're making a presentation. And I'm afraid my presentation will be not as good as young Carmen Nange, but we appreciate his contributions, and I will do my best. I will ask for your forgiveness of being an academic. If you will read that title and then not worry about it anymore. It's a long title, and I will give you a much more simple explanation for what the title means as we go through the presentation. But before we go to the presentation, I also have a story. Mine is a very short story, but I find it very interesting. My background is in information technology as well. And so I find it very interesting that two information technology people would have stories to tell. And not information technology stories. So if the adults will excuse me for a moment, I'm going to direct my focus to the children, but the story is also to the adults. But I'm going to come down and be with the children.
Yeah, I'll be out of the way. I'll have the presentation back in a moment. This is actually a story about globalization. Now, there are not many primary and junior high students that are very interested in globalization. And there may not be a lot of teachers in here today that are interested in globalization. I hope that through Sange's snow story that you'll understand a little bit more about globalization and how it actually impacts all of us. Many years ago, in the state of Texas, in the country of the United States, which is where I live, lived a young boy named Sange. Sange had one major responsibility to his family. Only one responsibility. He had to do only one thing. His job was to ride his camel. Wait a second. Was to ride his camel. The camel, if you haven't ever ridden a camel, horses go like that. Well, camels, you kind of go like that. Okay. So his one job every week was to ride his camel to the gray body of water in the middle of Texas and catch a big fat whale to feed his family. Sange would take the whale meat home in two large bags and would put on each side of the camel on the back so the bags would not leak. One week, though, as Sange was riding his camel, when Sange was riding his camel to the gray body of water to catch a big fat whale to feed his family, he came upon a tall mountain covered in snow. Sange determined that it would be much better to fill the bags with snow and take the bags of snow home to show his family, since there was no snow near his home for his family to see. Okay, now, you'll have to pay attention here because there are actually two endings to my story. Okay, I've got two different endings, and I'll tell you both endings, okay? But here's the first ending to the story. When Sange gets home, he opens the bags to show his family the snow. But instead of snow, he only found water from the melted snow. His parents became angry because he did not fulfill his only weekly responsibility, and they punished Sange. The moral of this ending to the story is that children, honor your parents by fulfilling your responsibilities. Okay, now here's the second ending to the story. When Sange gets home, he opens the bags to show his family the snow. But instead of snow, he only found water from the melted snow. While drinking the refreshing water, Sange's parents asked him to share the exciting story about finding the snow and to describe how beautiful it was. And they listened with pride over Sange's excitement and storytelling ability. The moral of this version of the story is, parents, help your children see the beauty in the world and encourage them in storytelling. Probably asking why it's about globalization. But this is the globalization part. I don't know how many people have traveled to Texas that are in this room. I don't know how many people that are in this room have actually read a lot about Texas. But there are a few items of the story. I might call them facts, except they're incorrect. Therefore, they can't be facts. But there are a few pieces of the story that are incorrect. They really don't fit the culture within Texas. First of all, the boy's name would probably not be Sange. It would probably be Colin. Also, the boy would probably not be riding a camel in Texas. The boy might be riding a horse, but probably ride a bicycle. There are no whales in the middle of Texas. There are also no tall mountains in the middle of Texas. And if by chance there was a tall mountain in the middle of Texas, it would not have any snow on it because it's very hot in the middle of Texas. The story is a metaphor for globalization. When businesses expand into different countries, into different cultures, without regard for the variety of characteristics and aspects of that culture, then you end up with businesses impacting a culture in much the same way that the story was developed. You have many inaccuracies. You have items that are considered fact that are really incorrect. And so I think that we have to be extremely careful when we have business and we talk about globalizing and moving into other cultures. Now, I'm not here to talk exactly about all of business and globalization. I actually want to pick on one piece of globalization. And I want to relate that one piece of globalization to the Bhutan 2020 vision, the vision for peace, prosperity, and happiness. The one aspect of globalization, business globalization, that I'm going to examine today is related to what is called cottage and small enterprise development. It is helping individuals understand how to create, develop, start their own small and very, very small businesses. And these are aimed at rural areas and in hopes of trying to have an opportunity for individuals in rural areas to have more than just basic agricultural enterprises to be a part of when they're growing up and trying to have a livelihood. That particular aspect of my paper is about training, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on the training because I really want to focus more on the culture and the this concept of integrating storytelling as a way of being culturally sensitive in doing the training. And so what I would like to say is that the real basis for the paper comes out of the Bataan 2020 document. And I'm going to read something very briefly out of that so you can see that it is extremely important to Bataan. And for me, even though we primarily have school children and we primarily have teachers and we don't have a lot of business individuals and we don't have a lot of government individuals today, I think it's extremely important for the children that are here to understand what can be done even within business and with storytelling. I think it's extremely important that our teachers understand that we also need stories that are related to economics and business so that our students can understand that aspect of our lives as well. So I do think it is important that we have the audience that we have today. And I apologize, I want to read something out of Bataan 2020. Despite the enormous efforts to Bataanize imported curricula, much still needs to be done to adapt teaching programs to the longer-term needs of the nation, especially through the strengthening of components that inculcate a work ethic and respect for the dignity of labor. More of our young people must be encouraged to pursue technical and vocational occupations that can only be found in the private sector. The document goes on to say that besides the large businesses that already exist, that small and cottage industries are the next focus. And it says this has been identified as another priority area with programs already in place aimed at enlarging access of small-scale producers to technology, credit, and markets so as to enable them to produce profitability for the domestic market with the priority dictated more by the need to maintain our rich craft tradition and to create productive employment than to capture export markets. All of that simply means is that the writers of Bataan 2020 understand that for the success of this country, that there needs to be a tremendous focus on providing opportunities in these cottage and small enterprises. And these are the types of enterprises that the majority of the Bataanese population is going to go into when they graduate either the high schools or the universities. And so it's important that this be a focus. Now, the one thing that I do promise is I'm not going to talk a lot about business. I'm not going to talk a lot about technology. I am going to talk about culture, because culture is extremely important to business. I've had major company leaders tell me that as they have gone around the world to expand their businesses, they have found the number one determining factor for success is how well they understand the culture in which they're going. So what I would like to do is very briefly, and I promise very briefly, tell you what is involved in helping individuals learn how to develop businesses, and then we'll move on into some of the things that are maybe a little bit more interesting. The first thing you have to determine is an individual a good candidate to start their own business? There are many different factors that one can look at, but are they honest? Do they have high moral standards? Do they have a strong commitment to doing a good job? Are they very energetic? Do they just like doing things, and are they hard to keep away from working hard, and are they very motivated? A second step is what's called community mapping. Now, community mapping is actually going and looking and seeing what kinds of stores in all the different locations in a community, finding out what the competition is, if there are too many stores already selling the same products, if there are not enough stores selling a product, or if there's a product you're interested in selling, is somebody else selling that? So community mapping is extremely important as well. And then the third step is called business planning. You have to understand the purpose of the business, which we call the business objective.
You have to have a marketing plan in place. This is how you're going to get your information communicated to your population. For example, me starting today with a small story to communicate to our students down here actually is a way for me to market my presentation today, because I want it to be something that is of some interest to the students here as well as to the teachers and the other adults that are in the audience. But you have to be concerned in the same way about making your products and your services appealing to those that are in the community. And then the third thing is a financial plan, and that's where you determine how you're going to pay for your initial beginnings of the business and then how you're going to be able to continue moving forward with that business. One of the aspects, one term, and I put it up here specifically because I do think it's a term that's very, very important to individuals, particularly in rural areas that are looking at maybe starting a business, and it's called microfinancing. Microfinancing is the use of very small sums of money from many different sources as loans to be able to start a business and then to repay those loans as the business is progressing. What I really want to focus on for a moment, though, are called the 10 dimensions of culture. I project to the audience today, especially the adults, but the children that are in the audience, I think, need to understand, even from a young age, what determines your culture. Now, these 10 dimensions have been created as dimensions of culture that impact business. But I think that you'll see, as I tell you what each one of these actually mean in regards to business, that they are much broader than just for business. And remember, the ultimate goal is to be able to have a culturally sensitive training program to help individuals in rural areas know how to create businesses, and that we would do this through a storytelling model. And so it's important to know these 10 dimensions and how they are actually in existence and in reality in communities where you want to do the training. So it's important to know how these dimensions are in any community you would go into. The first one is communication. And the definition for that is communication recognizes the different formats for expression and information exchange that cultures expect, reinforce, and reward. It's a very, very complex dimension. It's very hard to measure. But if you can understand how individuals communicate, it is very, very telling and defining about a culture. The second one is structure. Structure recognizes there are different cultural perspectives and attitudes towards change, risk, ambiguity, and uncertainty. And what that really means is that cultures that favor a more ordered structure will prefer that rules and regulations are strictly followed. Other cultures are less rigid and emphasize a more flexible application of rules. Now, even on that one dimension, you can tell if a community is very, very flexible in how their rules are enforced, that will make a difference on how somebody starts a business in that community. If it's very, very rigid, then you have to follow the laws, you have to follow what the community leaders say and exactly how they do it. If it's not that way, then you can not have to follow the rules that they have expressed or follow them in the way that you think is appropriate. So, and I'm not going to give an example in every one because it does take a long time, but I do want you to think as you are in a community here, as some of the adults have come from other communities in Bhutan, that those communities are probably different from this community in Thimphu. There may be differences in different parts of this community as well. And so as I'm going through and defining each of the terms, think about how these terms affect your community. The third item up there is thinking. Thinking relates to cultural differences in thinking patterns and perceptions of important criteria for arguments, analysis, and planning. And it's basically how you go about doing those different processes. The next item is environment. Okay, when you see the word environment, you're probably going to be thinking about the world around you. That's not the environment, or that's actually too narrow a view of environment in regards to this term. An analysis of the environment gives us a way in which to view and relate to people, objects, and issues in our sphere of influence. So it's not just the world around us, the trees and the plants and the land, but it's also the people as well. It is the relationships as well. It's other businesses. It's actually the government. It's whatever the environment is that our business is going to operate in. We need to understand it extremely well. Individualism refers to the level of identity humans feel in being related to any group, such as a family, caste, clan, tribe, or class. Now, ordinarily, in an oral storytelling culture, individualism is not something that is understood. It is that we are family. We are all part of this together. And so what is good for the group and for the family is much more important than what is important for me, the individual. And so we have to understand how that is in a community, because if we're going to start a business, we, number one, need to know what the people are like that we're going to market our products and services to, so we'll know what will work in our marketing plan. So it's important to know about individualism as well. Power refers to how cultures value social stratification, centralization of power, status, hierarchy, and authority. Hierarchical cultures are those that have a very distinct order of power and of influence. If you have one individual that is in charge of everything, and then they can tell other individuals what to do, and then they tell other individuals what to do, then you have a hierarchical type of power. On the other hand, if everybody is very equal and has an equal say, then you have what would be called a very flat power environment. And you have to understand that as well. We move down to action. It says, action focuses on the view of actions and interactions with people and ideas that tend to be expected, reinforced, and rewarded in a given cultural environment. Basically, action is how people do things. It's how they work in groups. It's how decisions are made. And we need to understand that, again, as we're moving in with a new business. And actually, the real important thing here is, as we're training people on how to develop new businesses. Competitiveness, as it relates to cultures, refers to different motivators, such as actions, choices, decisions, and customs. One year, I took some students to the country of Morocco in Africa, and the students were doing this same type of training, and they were training university students, and we got to this particular issue of competitiveness. And one of my student trainers asked the question, what would you do if during an exam the professor walked out of the room and the student neighbor asked for the answer to a question? And in the United States, we would have policies that would say if you helped that other student, then you would be in trouble with the professor. In Morocco, the immediate answer, every single student, the immediate answer was, I tell them the answer. And the reason there was that they're in a very non-competitive environment. They're in a cooperative environment. They are more concerned about how everybody does on the exam as opposed to doing better than the other people on the exam. So it's important to understand how that impacts business as you're trying to understand this concept of competitiveness. And then the last two. First, we have time. Use and views of time that are expected, reinforced, and rewarded by social groups or within societies and organizations convey powerful messages about what we value and how we relate to one another and to the world around us. It's very interesting as I travel around the world that there are some cultures that if you have a business meeting and you are not there before that business meeting is prepared to begin, so that it can begin when it is scheduled to begin, then you have very much violated the culture in that country. In other countries, you can get there on time, and then the meeting may start 30 minutes later, and that's just the norm. It may even start later than that. And that's because there's a much more fluid and flexible view of this time dimension. Well, you have to understand this when you go into business as well. It's something as small as when do you open and when do you close your shop. If you're in a country that is very precise in its time orientation, and you set a schedule of opening at 9 o'clock and closing at 8 o'clock, you'd better be open by 9 o'clock, and you can close at 8 o'clock, at 8 o'clock, and expect that there won't be any problems. If it is a more fluid time orientation, maybe you post on your door that you open at 9 o'clock, but you may show up at 10 o'clock to open the business, and nobody cares, because that's just the culture. And you have to understand these aspects about meetings and opening times and how you relate to others in regards to time. And then the last one is space. Space refers to the distinctions cultures make in their use and demarcation of physical space and psychological space. It's also very interesting as we travel and interact with business people around the world that in many, many cultures, it is very acceptable for me to be standing with another businessman face to face and either have my hand on their shoulder or be holding their hand, but also to be just very, very close as I am to this microphone as we're talking. In other cultures, particularly in the country of the United States, it is very uncomfortable if you're talking this closely to another individual, particularly in business. It's also very inappropriate to touch the other individual during a business meeting. And so it's very, very important to know how that concept of space is important in every business culture. And it's different even within individual countries as to how all of these different dimensions might exist. And so it's important, if we're going to try and train individuals how to start businesses in a particular culture, it's important that the trainers understand how these dimensions impact business in that culture. Now, I'm going to move into the storytelling aspect of this, because this is actually what's extremely important, I believe, particularly as I come to Bhutan to visit with this group, and particularly as it is related to this particular conference. Storytelling has been the medium of choice for transmitting history and lore and culture for generations in many, many countries of the world. It actually began this way in every country that I have been able to see. It's no longer the medium of choice in all countries, but in cultures. And at this point, I'm not talking about countries, I'm talking about cultures. Because in some countries, there are what we might call subcultures